BOAG World is brought to you by headscape.co.uk in association with getsignoff.com and the website owner's manual. In this week's show, we discuss taking context into consideration when designing websites. We answer your questions about video for an elderly audience and the most influential books in the industry.
Hi Paul, how are you doing?
Hi Paul, how are you?
Hello Paul.
Hi Paul.
Hi Paul and Marcus.
Hello and welcome first ever BOAGworld.com podcast.
BOAG World!
Hello, welcome to the 100th episode of BOAG World!
Hello, welcome to BOAGworld.com, for all those involved in designing, developing and running websites on a daily basis. My name's Paul Bagg.
And my name's Marcus Lillington.
And once again, we are here. And I'm drawing a line in the sand.
And I recognise that line.
And you respect that line?
I do.
That's good. Shall I tell you what the line is for?
You're not going to say the numbers anymore.
No, never again. Oh yeah, normally I start off differently, don't
Well,
I?
Well, yeah, because it's like it's just showing off now, isn't it?
127.
This is the 1475th episode of BOAG
I don't think that's showing off. I think that is just like
it's a sign of
how depressingly long we've done this.
Yeah, it's just, it's stamina. Yeah. We can keep coming up with this dribble for this long.
We have started repeating ourselves.
And what do you mean started? We're repeating, you know what I'm trying to say.
You're having such a bad day speaking. You ought to have heard how many times
tired.
You tried to record that introduction. So no, the line that I'm drawing is, last week's show, 1 hour and 11 minutes.
1 hour, 12 and 33 seconds.
Never again will we have a show that long. I'm not having it.
Some people quite like it, probably.
I don't care. This show is coming down in length to 45 minutes.
Yeah, right.
Well, I'm dropping a section.
Okay.
Because I've decided it's too much. Because we normally do like an interview and a feature, or a feature and a review. And I think that's too much. So now we're just going to do one or the other, if that makes sense. Either an interview
Does
or a feature.
Does it mean we can ramble longer at the start?
No,
and finish?
It doesn't. We need to be concise, quick and on the ball. How many times have I said that before?
Roll's eyes.
So, yeah, next few weeks. We're on like, we're La La Land now, aren't we?
Not
well,
quite.
I am.
Well, yeah, you are. So you go to Scotland for some, you've just got to stand up for half an hour and go,
Excuse me, hour and a half.
And then they'll go, really? Ooh, hello, Paul.
Shut up.
And then he goes off to sort of work, fingers in the air.
No, I actually go in the Highlands of Scotland. I go for a week's holiday in the Highlands and then work fingers in the air after that for a week. So the podcast is going to get a bit complicated for a few weeks. In fact, for the foreseeable future. So let me go through this. Next week.
I am on holiday, though. I'm on holiday from the 1st of August for 20 days.
Mm, 20 days?
Yeah.
Where are you going?
I don't know yet.
So you're taking 20 days off and you don't know where you're going?
No, it's not only that. We took the first 2 weeks off, but I happened to be off on the Friday.
Right.
Next Friday. This is so boring. And we'd said what we'd do is we'll have a week at home and a week away, and we will literally go into an estate agent, into a travel agent, and say, what you got? And we'll just go, yeah, go tonight.
Cool. But that's not 20 days.
No, but what's happened is we... my dad died earlier in the year, and we are going to... scatter his ashes in an island off Scotland called Iona.
Oh, right.
Which I'm doing on the 18th of August, I think.
Ah.
So that's like after the 2 weeks. That's why it's...
Right, it's all got stretched out.
Yeah.
So, next week, you're going to be by yourself?
Kinda.
Oh, what are you planning?
You're going to give me a review.
No, I'm not doing that now.
Are you?
Because we're cutting it down.
Oh, right.
So you'll have the...
I've got some bits from other people.
Oh, Paul and Ryan are helping with the news, aren't they? They're going to do the news section at the beginning of the show.
But it will be me doing this bit.
So yeah.
What I'm going to try and do, actually, is me and you. So I'll change my voices.
Well, it's like that time where I used a synthesized voice to replace you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay. So you next week with your imaginary friend.
My imaginary friend, yeah.
Then the week after, Paul and Ryan. So Paul and Ryan are... Paul is our producer, Ryan is our researcher. And so the week after, you and me are both away.
Mm-hmm.
So it was going to be no show, just not doing a show at all. But then I thought, well, let's give them a go at it, because they used to do their own podcast. So they're going to be doing the show. So that would be hugely entertaining. I'm not looking forward to listening to that, because you know they're going to wail on us majorly, aren't they? They're going to be really rude about us.
And much better, probably.
Probably. That would be the annoying thing. That'll be better than us. Then the week after that, it's just me.
Yep.
And then the week after that, both of us are away. So I don't know what's going to happen then. Might be Paul and Ryan again, might not. So there we go. That's going to...
It's the summer holidays, and that's the way it is.
Yeah. But there you go. Such is life. Anyway, I think that's a long enough a rambling introduction, as we're supposed to be, being concise and to the point today and efficient. So let's move on to the news. Bugworld.com. Okay, so Mr. Efficient, this is the news. He says, doing like they do. They always do that on...
Yes,
when they bang the paper on the table, they will use...
Just read the headlines then.
Okay.
Just the titles.
Working from home... British standards for accessibility.
Well, that sounds like an exciting one.
Growing your business through Twitter. Smart CSS ain't always sexy. There's the news. Right, feature of the day. Okay, I suppose we ought to go through that. Right, working from home. So, the first post of the week appears on a list apart and applies to a growing number of people, especially within the web design industry, because it's the subject, as we've already said, of working from home.
Mm.
And according to a Home Business report... published in October 2007, home-based businesses account for 28% of all employment and has a combined UK turnover in excess of £364 billion. That's impressive.
It's a lot.
You're going to net... This is a point where you say, I don't believe you, Paul. You've made up figures.
Yeah, so apart from the fact that, yes, you probably made that up, but let's assume you didn't.
Right.
That's a lot more than I thought.
28%. Of all employment is home working based.
I reckon
now.
They asked 100 people. It just so happened 28 people were home workers.
Yeah, it could be. no doubt that percentage is even higher amongst web designers. Because
possibly.
I think quite a lot of web designers work from home. Therefore, it's no surprise that this is a subject that's becoming increasingly written about within web design circles. And this particular post is written from the perspective actually of a home working mother.
I was about to say we've covered it, but then what haven't we covered?
Well, yeah, we've covered everything. And also, we haven't covered it from the perspective of a homeworking mother.
You're right.
However, to be honest, her advice applies to anyone considering working from home. Some of the things that she covers in her article are how to draw the line between home and work, which is very good. How to isolate yourself from the rest of the family while working, which is also very good. Like going la, la, la with your fingers in your ears seem to work for me. How to explain to your clients why there's a screaming child in the background of your conference call, which I've had to do on more than one occasion.
It's not good, though, is it?
No, it's not. And how to win clients that understand your situation and the situation that you're working in. So if you're already a home worker, I'm honestly not sure that this article is going to tell you anything that you haven't already learned the hard way, to be honest. But if you are considering making the switch... for whatever reason, then it's definitely worth a read. So check that out on the Alistair Park website.
I've got to make a comment.
Yes, go on.
Because we've been working from home for so long now.
Yes.
It's actually, I think, becoming detrimental. It was great when we started, and I really enjoyed it. But maybe I just need to move house and have a different home to work from. I'm just like, I'm bored of it. I'm just like, there's nobody there. Like, la, la, la.
You do feel like you never leave the house, don't you?
Yeah, it's like I've got to go out.
Yeah. Yeah, I do know what you mean.
That's why I'm an alcoholic, you see.
I think you were an alcoholic way before. Anyway, next up is the British Standard for Accessibility. So some time ago, the British Standards Institute and the Disability Rights Commission, I know it's boring, Marcus, but we've got to cover it,
yeah, go on,
teamed up to release the first formal guidelines for business on web accessibility in the UK called PAS 78. Do you remember,
Remember
it well. So PAS 78 was intended to be a kind of web accessibility guide aimed at website owners rather than web designers. I have to say, personally, I found the results somewhat disappointing because the language was really... It was pitched wrong, in my opinion. The kind of advice was solid, but the language referred too often to the WAI guidelines and was too techy. You know, it was too techily written, basically, for website owners. However, despite my personal opinion, the document has proved very popular and now is being converted into a full British standard. A British standard, for those of you that do not know, is a kind of common standard used for a variety of products produced in the UK. And although anybody can claim to meet these standards without external review, it is possible to be officially certified. And once you're certified, you get to display the BSI kite mark, which is quite a recognised symbol in the UK.
Is.
You kind of know that if there's a kite mark on it, it's decent. So it's quite interesting that they're looking at applying this principle to web accessibility. And I have to say, I think personally, it's a better route to take for web accessibility rather than legislation, to have like a, you know, a standard of quality that, that people recognise rather than just taking people to court left, right and centre.
Yeah, because it costs a fortune to do that.
Yeah, and I just, it's good. It's kind of something that consumers can use as a way of choosing, you know, where they are. And it kind of shames people into doing it as well. So that's good. What are you giggling at?
Shaming people.
Shaming. You like shaming.
And naming.
Shaming and naming. Although I had some concerns about the original PAS 78, I have to say the team working on this British standard actually looks like quite a good team and some good people from the industry, that many of which you talked to on the show. So
cool.
It's a good lineup of people. So there we go. Next up. Now, Marcus, you will no doubt snigger at this because I know that you don't believe that there is any use in Twitter whatsoever, do you?
It's quite good when you want to find out where the party is. It's true, though. I do. I ask you when we're in Austin, Paul, where's the party?
Yes.
And you go, Twitter, Twitter, Twitter. It's here. Then we go and drink beer. Okay. For free, usually.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Which is good. So, to be honest, I like this next post because it solved an embarrassing problem that I have, right? Which is when I'm sitting in the pub with my mates, they occasionally catch me Twittering. And it's particularly embarrassing because I can't really explain why I use Twitter. I kind of made vague attempts, but it is quite a hard thing to justify.
It's passive showing off.
It's not
passive. I'm in the pub.
It's not passive showing off.
Aren't I clever? I'm in the pub.
I haven't Twittered today, actually. It's quite distressing. I know.
Yeah, and it's passive showing off and an addiction all thrown into one. There you go.
So there's this post.
It's me, me, me.
Oh, shut up.
That's what it is. It is. Look what I'm doing. Me, look at me, look at me.
Shut up. It's a post basically via Tiffany Jones at Blue Flavor, and she puts together quite a good argument about why Twittering has, what place Twittering has. And her post actually relies heavily on another one from Elliot J. Stocks, who wrote his a few months earlier. And so he basically suggests that Twitter is a great icebreaker. It's a purveyor of ambient intimacy. I know what he really... Just giving you the summary bullet point doesn't explain it very well, but it's a good
please
point.
Please explain that one.
Okay, ambient intimacy is basically the idea that you meet people at conferences and stuff like that, and you want to keep vaguely in touch with, okay? You want to kind of know them, but you're never going to really know them. They're not going to become best buddies or anything. And Twitter enables you to know enough about their lives so the next time you meet with them, you've got something to talk about. You're vaguely aware in the background of the stuff that they're doing and up to.
Yeah, I guess from a networking, salesy, kind of quite cynical point of view, yes, it has some uses.
Thank you. It's also a broadcast marketing tool, which again is the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's also a fount of knowledge, and this is true. I can ask a question on Twitter and normally get a better and quicker answer than if I Google it. Because, admittedly,
come on.
Seriously, I'm not kidding you. Admittedly, I've got a large number of followers, which really helps. But
see what I mean? Me, me, me.
Shut up.
My disciples find things out for me.
And finally, it's a social network. I'm moving on now. Both posts communicate well the power of social networks if used wisely. And this has certainly been my experience. I can't read this anymore because Marcus is just sitting there grinning. Check out the article.
Yes.
Basically. I agreed
with the general... The title of this was Growing Your Business Through Twitter. Yes, it has. It could work for that. Yes.
And if you want to read the rest of the things that I was going to say about this news story before Marcus started interfering, go to boagworld.com/podcast/127 and you can see more information. Okay, moving on. My final article of today demonstrates what I think is a bit of a sea change within the web standards community at the moment. And it's, I guess...
Use tables? Nested tables are the way forward.
Yeah, it's the way to go. And spacer GIFs.
Yeah.
There's not enough spacer GIFs in web design anymore. We've lost our way. It's a controversial post that appears on the digital web magazine entitled Smart CSS Ain't Always Sexy CSS. Bad grammar. I disapprove of that.
What?
Ain't. Who uses ain't in a sentence?
Well, you use gonna and words like that.
Yeah, but
I always get very upset about that.
I don't use gonna in written format.
Yes, you do.
I do not.
Yes, you do.
That's terrible.
It's true. It's just Americanism. Chris and I found, I've just got to say this, and this is kind of for Paul, this is a bit of an internal joke, but Chris and I were ranting about the state of grammar and spelling amongst the youth of today.
Oh, God.
And we caught ourselves doing it, and it's like, oh, we better stop.
That is terrible. That is something to be ashamed of.
It's true, though.
Anyway. So this article challenges some of the basic arguments of standardite zealots. For example, is it really that bad to name a class red? Marcus, do you think that it's bad to name a class red? Do you understand the logic of why it would be bad?
Red can be, it can mean danger.
No, you're on the wrong track there.
It could put people off.
The standards community argue that basically your HTML code shouldn't include stuff that's related to design. So having a class that's red, right? Well, what if that link changed to green later on? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
And then it'd be called red, although it's actually visually appearing as green. That'd be confusing.
Yeah.
But is that really that bad? Do we need to pursue semantics at all costs, even when it compromises performance or maintainability? And this, to be honest, is the argument that's put forward in this article and kind of represents a growing group of designers that are calling for a more pragmatic approach to web standards. And increasingly, I'm seeing little examples of rebellion against this kind of extreme, standardist point of view. Whether it's kind of posts from Jeff Croft, who seems to often annoy standards-based designers, or the twitterings of Andy Clark. I saw a Twitter from Andy Clark going, do I really need to make my site scalable? Can it be a fixed width? Can I use pixels for fonts and stuff like that? It would appear that we're beginning to develop a bit more of a grown-up approach to web standards. So does this mean we can throw away good practice? Well, of course not. It simply means that we are mature enough in our knowledge to bend some rules. I always kind of bring it back to the example of painters, right? Everybody looks at, say, Jackson Pollock's paintings and go, there's no skill in that. He's just thrown paint at a canvas. But in order to be able to do that, admittedly, in order to be able to do that, you need to understand the underlying principles. And it's like, some other artists, Picasso's another good example. Picasso for years painted superb, very realistic paintings before he started to go off into his cubism and strange stuff like that. Mm. And I think it's the same principle. You kind of need to do standards properly first before you can then be able, make more pragmatic decisions and do maybe more unusual stuff later on down the line. So I guess the moral of the story really is if you're new to standards, you ought to stick with the rules. However, if you're a bit more experienced, there's nothing wrong, with making compromises from time to time and making those kind of judgment calls. It's kind of consequences of growing up, I guess, really. So there you go.
Ooh.
That sums up the news for today. And let's hurtle on into our feature segment of the show.
Bugworld.com.
So our feature segment of the show is, as always, brought to you by the Website Owner's Manual, available at bugworld.com/Website Owner's Manual. The Website Owner's Manual, how many times could I say the name?
What is it?
Website Owner's Manual. It's a book that I am currently writing that actually is available right now through an early access program where you can download chapters as they are written, and at the end of it all, they send you the final printed book. So imagine it as pre-ordering with preview built in.
Yeah.
That sounds
so good.
So Website Owner's Manual...
How could you not do it?
I know. The Website Owner's Manual is basically a book aimed at website owners, telling them all they need to know about web design. So let's move on to the feature of the day. See, I'm getting shorter with the advert. The feature of the day has got a controversial title. Content is dead. Long live context. So immediately I got a load of comments from and emails from people going, I disagree with the fact that content is dead. But it was just a grabbing title, really. Yeah. And I don't really think content's dead at all.
Yeah. Once again, Paul's grabbing everyone's attention. Look at me.
Look, you can't play that game, Mr. I used to be a pop star and went around the world showing off.
Yeah, well, that was then.
Right at the beginning of the show, did you, before we started recording, did you not say I'm a showman?
Might have done.
Yeah, there we go. So, yes, no, content isn't really dead. Yes, content is important. But in my opinion, there can only be one king, and I am beginning to wonder whether actually that is context. The more I consider context, the more I'm beginning to realize its impact on every aspect of websites and web design. Context affects design, usability, accessibility, and obviously content. Its importance is profound, and yet as web designers, we largely ignore it. But what exactly is context, and how does it apply to websites? And it's actually quite hard to define. It's probably easier to think in terms of kind of a user's context when accessing your website. Understanding this context affects how you design a site. So we put a lot of emphasis on user-centric design. We believe that understanding users is important. So for example, we carry out lots of user testing. However, just think for a minute what we do when we use a test, right? We take people, we bring them into Usability Lab or wherever we do the testing, but we almost always bring them out of their natural environment and test them there. And actually, we're removing them from their normal context. And so we're not observing the context within which they access a website. Mm-hmm. And that's an important element I think we're missing. Equally, when we create personas, we focus on things like demographics, you know, age, sex, job, title, you know, that kind of thing, rather than the context in which they're accessing the website. I think we are actually missing a crucial part of the web design jigsaw puzzle. So what is a user's context? Well, I had a little think about this, obviously not too much because I don't like to waste time on preparing, and I've come up with five contexts that I think are relevant to web design, and those are environment, device, comfort, mood, and time, right? Now, I have to say a lot of these overlap with one another, but those are the basic five areas I kind of identified, and I'm sure you guys can let me know lots more. By the way, we do always encourage lots of comments and feedback, and so if you go to the show notes, which I think I've already said, well, boagworld.com/podcast/127. Then you add your comments into this because I'd like to hear what you think on this because this is a new area. Not many people are thinking about it. So let's look at each of these in turn. Environment. Environment refers to a number of factors, including location. The kind of information a user wants to access is very dependent on his or her location. For example, someone planning a weekend break are probably going to sit down and look at the stuff they want to find out on the PC. You know, they're going to want information on hotels and attractions and that kind of stuff. However, when they're actually on the break and maybe using their mobile phone, they're more likely to want information about where the nearest pub is or what the opening times for that museum that they were intending to visit or that kind of stuff. So location, however, is not the only thing, does not just affect content. It also can affect design. So viewing web content outside will mean you're battling against sunlight and so you perhaps require higher contrast. Alternatively, you do not want to be dealing with a fiddly form when you're jostling at a train station. So it affects design as well. However, environment isn't just location. It also includes distractions and surroundings. So, for example, a mother with three toddlers is going to find it hard to concentrate on a complex survey with children demanding her attention, screaming, running around, you know, pulling their hair out and stuff. Equally, a user accessing a web website from a library is not going to appreciate audio suddenly playing on that web on that website. Although, hopefully,
I don't think the library would have the speakers to.
But you get the kind of idea. Environment also defines the type of device we're using when it comes to accessing the web, and so that brings us nicely onto our second point, which is device. So although the location and device often go hand in hand, in other words, you tend to use a PC when at home and a mobile when out and about, this is not the only effect device has on context. The device also determines the input methods available. So few mobile phones come with a quirky keyboard and none come with a mouse. So you can access the web via game consoles as well, like the Wii, and that doesn't, you know, that obviously has its, you know, Wii mote thing or whatever it is. These generally rely on, you know, these games consoles rely on things like gamepads, remotes and screen keyboards rather than traditional kind of mouse and keyboard. Different input devices also radically affect the user interface. Not only do each of these devices alter the way we interact with the system, they also alter the way we view the information. So typically with a PC, we're sitting quite close to the monitor and viewing it at higher resolutions, while games consoles are normally attached to a TV, which run at much lower resolutions and you sit further away from. With a mobile device, it's lower resolution still, and you're viewing it from a different position again. This all affects the design of your website. So talking of viewing position, the other factor that you need to consider is user comfort. I know it sounds stupid, but it is actually true. Sorry, took a drink there. So how we physically, you know, how physically comfortable we are as a user affects the length of time we will interact with the site. Although you cannot know whether your target audience is comfortable or not, this is something you can maybe make an educated guess at in certain circumstances. For example, if you know the user is accessing your website via a kiosk in a shopping mall, chances are they're going to be standing up and so aren't going to hang around for long, right?
Yep.
Comfort to a large degree is dictated by environment, but not entirely. It can also be dictated by physical conditions. So if you're launching a site aimed at those that suffer from back pain or weak bladders, perhaps weak bladders is a bit of a stretch, then don't expect them to spend a long time looking at your site. In some ways, comfort is also closely linked to our next factor, which is mood. You can tell that, yeah, sorry, just a tangent here. You can tell that I've been writing a book because I've now started linking sections together.
So segues.
Yes. I feel this need to put segues into everything. I've been indoctrinated by my development editor. Okay, mood. There is no way you can predict, obviously, the emotional whims of your audience. But they do affect people's attention spans. You know, if you're busy or stressed, then you tend to get irritable with the site much quicker and you're more likely to give up and go away. Conversely, if you are relaxed, then you will muddle through and you're tolerant of bad design. So it's important to consider the likely temperament of your users. For example, are there business executives that are likely to be less patient than, say, a pensioner sitting in his villa in the south of France?
Right.
So environment, device and comfort can all impact mood. However, the biggest influencer to mood is actually time. There's my next segue.
Luckily, you don't have to go through the commentary.
Do I not? No, is that not necessary? Okay. Time. It's obvious that the time available to a user affects how long they spend on a site. however, we often don't take this into account when designing sites. And I often see, you know something in your head, but the number of times you ignore it when you're actually doing the design. So we all know that if somebody's hasn't got a lot of time, they're not going to spend long on your site. But the number of sites I go to that have got unnecessary form fields or content buried deep in the site, you know, they're just two ways that you can ignore the time constraints users operate under. Online banking is a brilliant example of this. It's so complex to log on to my account now that it's quicker for me to pick up the phone and call them. Mm. I've actually timed it because that's how anal I am.
Oh, dear.
It's quicker for me to call them now than it is to use the internet. And that's got to be, there's something wrong there, isn't there? You know,
just don't bother looking. Or ringing them.
Well, yeah, but this is why you're massively in debt.
Then you don't get any nasty surprises.
Yeah. I don't know where to go with that, really. With time being a valuable commodity, users often choose a competitor's site because it's quicker and faster to get things done. So there you go. That's my list of different things. Of course, in reality, there's a lot of overlap with these facets. However, I've yet to read much about context that isn't directly related to mobile devices. And actually, it's a much broader subject than that. So hopefully I've demonstrated that it is a bigger subject and that we should all be taking this seriously, whether we're designing a mobile website or not. So there you go. That's the listeners section for the feature for the day.
I'm quite impressed, Paul.
Did you think that was actually good content in there?
Yeah, you thought about that.
And something new.
Yes.
You've heard the same old crap from me for so long.
Yeah. But, I mean, I'm obviously not so asleep that I actually noticed.
Yeah.
It was new.
Yeah, there we go. So let's move on to listener feedback, shall we?
Birdworld.com.
Okay, listener feedback time.
Dun, dun, dun.
Absolutely. So this is a question from Stephen. He writes, I am currently working on a website that is going to be targeted towards an older demographic. There seems to be a large disagreement on whether video should be included on the site. The site is quite in-depth and video explanation could be crucial. The main argument seems to be that people might not have the Flash player and in turn not be able to view the video. On the other hand, the Adobe site says that market penetration on Flash player is over 99%. Is Flash video a usability issue?
Good question.
Well, Adobe and Macromedia have always said they've like 99.97 yes. penetration.
Take a big container of salt with that.
Yes.
No, I mean, I think it is pretty high. And whether it's... the trouble is, yes, the Flash player has probably got a penetration of 99%. But that won't always be the current Flash player.
No.
And... video is only supported, and this is where I'm going to get into dangerous territory here because I'm not a Flash expert.
Just say it anyway. Go on.
Should I just make something up?
Yeah, make it up.
I think it's only supported from version 9 up, but that is probably
wrong. I was
going
to say 7,
wrong.
But hey.
If I am wrong, please can you post that in the show notes? Don't email me because I don't care. But post it in the show notes for other people that do care and want that information. Yeah, but I think you need to take it with a pinch of salt. Actually, this whole area is something I've been thinking about quite a lot because I guess because our biggest client is a site that works with an elderly audience. So it's something we've had to consider and put some thought into. And unfortunately, as with all of life, there's not a straight yes-no answer, is
there? Yes, video's fine.
Okay, there's the end of that. That's good.
As long as you've got alternative content.
Yeah, there we go. See, now you get in there. You could have answered this question, couldn't you, really?
Of course I could.
So I see no reason why you can't use video. I agree with Marcus. You have to take the claims of Adobe with a pinch of salt. But I think the vast majority of the audience that have it installed, in my experience, the only people that don't have Flash installed tend to be behind corporate firewalls.
My biggest concern with an elderly audience is whether they've got the audio aspects of their computer setup working.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that one, but that is a good point.
Turn it on, it's like, why isn't it working, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Not that I'm suggesting that old people are stupid or anything. Because I'm kind of close to being an old person.
Yeah, you need to be careful. You know, I think, as Marcus says, you can't rely entirely on Flash here. The elderly, you know, as you get more elderly, you do start to develop, you know, visual, physical and even cognitive conditions that can make it hard to interact with Flash in some circumstances. And although a well-designed application can minimize these problems, it can still affect a significant number of users. So I'm afraid that although you can use Flash, you probably do need to provide alternatives. This could either be in the form of transcripts or captions in the case of video. But additional work is going to be required, I'm sorry to say. But yeah, no reason why you can't include it, basically.
No, I think generally speaking, the majority of the audience, pretty much whatever age, would appreciate viewing video over reading context.
Yeah, exactly.
Context.
The other thing, the other little sweeping generalisation we can make about old people is I suspect, and I don't have facts to back this up, but I suspect the proportion of them still on dial-up might be higher.
Possibly, yeah.
So that might be another thing that you... I bet a bit of Googling could probably give you some statistics on that. Okay, next question is an audio question.
Hello, Misters Boag, Lillington, and any guests that may or may not be present. As you guys are cool web celebrities, it is assumed that you have at one time or another read an actual book. What in your mind are the two most influential books that you have read, not just for web design, but also for work and life in general? Thank you very much for the deconstruct ticket. I do think that Marx's jokes are improving, not that those two are in any way related.
Right, yes. Influential books. Now, Marcus, you copped out of this.
Yeah, because I haven't got any.
Well, this is ridiculous, because he didn't say just web design books. He said any books that have influenced you. So you must have books that influenced you.
Yeah.
I demand an answer.
Story books.
Yeah, go on then.
I remember I read Lord of the Rings when I was 12, and that was just blew me away.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
But would you say, okay, blew you away, that's it is a good book, that, but did it influence you? Has it influenced your kind of character and behaviour in any way?
Yeah, I kind of kept my feet hairy. What else? I'm quite sort of worried about dark shadows. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it was inspirational from a kind of, I don't know. That's quite a hard question to ask, answer even.
Well, is there any other books then that have affected how you view life or what you do?
If you like, yes, I bashed the microphone there. Lord of the Rings kind of is quite spiritual in a way.
Yes, it is.
And it took me, the next book that I was going to read, to make me realise that's a load of old tripe.
Right.
Which was a book by Douglas Adams called Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency.
Do you know, I saw that recently and nearly downloaded it to read it. Is it good?
It's fantastic.
Oh, I'll have to check that one out then.
Truly wonderful. But it's very non-spiritual.
So is it going to offend my Christian sensibilities?
No, it's nothing anti-Christian about it.
Oh, right.
It's just like, you know, just sort of paints things as they are.
Right.
But if you start reading it, you'll think, what's he on about?
Right.
It's the one with the electric sheep or the electric horse in it and all this stuff.
I can't believe I haven't read that.
It's marvellous. I won't tell you anything because you can't give it away. It's one of those books that I literally got to the end of it and read it all again. Because
right.
Like, oh, wow. Right. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Cool.
Start it again.
So, any other books that have had an influence on you?
I know it's more a case of like I've got favourite books, but that's because I just love the creative.
You don't. I don't think you're not. You don't strike me as somebody that's influenced by outside factors a lot. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No. Yes. But self confident and.
Well, I tend to, you know, anything I read, I instantly believe and then act on.
Yeah, I don't know. There's certain experiences, but they're often artistic. I remember I went to see I recently went to see the Foo Fighters at Wembley, and
right.
That was like a major experience. It was so good,
but it doesn't change your life.
It didn't change my life, but it was an emotional experience that I wasn't expecting. Yeah. I thought I was just going to see a good band,
right?
And it was more than that.
Ah, cool.
But no, things that I don't know.
I just don't think you have a world view. That's your trouble. You don't have like. What's the word I'm looking for? You don't have a philosophy to life, really, do you?
I don't know.
Do you know? Do you?
Yeah, sort of, you know, hedonism rules. There you go. There's one.
Okay, fine.
I don't know. I'm not quite sure what you mean by that.
I don't know quite what I mean either. It's interesting. So I'm the other extreme. I could have listed like 50 books. So I've cheated straight off the bat, and I've made this like Radio 4's Desert Island Discs, in the sense that they ask you on that which book you would take with you. But they give you free of charge the Bible and the Complete Works of Shakespeare, which is very good, because otherwise
plenty to read there.
Yeah, I would waste one selection at least, although I don't think I would go with the Complete Works of Shakespeare, I have to say. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. So the two that I selected, well, the first one is Getting Things Done by David Allen. I have to say that this is, I know I've spoken endlessly about this book before, but that's because it's had such a profound impact on me. It's an easy book to dismiss with statements like, I don't need to read this because I'm already organised, or it just tells you to write lists. In fact, there's a lot more to it than that, or at least can be if you want there to be. Getting things done has made me radically rethink a lot of my life, really, and particularly what I spend my time doing. I'm one of these people that's very conscious that I'm very conscious we don't have a lot of time on this world, really. It's a quite a depressing thought. What's this got? I don't know what any of this has got to do with web
design. We've got bloody years, Paul.
Yeah, but in the grand scheme of things, it's not long.
But you believe there's loads after it.
Yeah, I know, but that's how I'm going to be doing other stuff then.
I mean, I believe this is it.
Yeah, why are you pissing away the whole time? It's quite beyond me.
I have a great life, thank you very much.
Yeah, I know you do. But And so it's important to me that I spend my time doing the stuff that I actually like and that I actually enjoy doing. And this has made me question my, this book has made me question my priorities and change what I spend my life doing. Yes, I do now write a lot of lists, and yes, I am more organized, but that's not what I really got from this book. It kind of taught me to take control of my life and decide what I want to achieve. And that's applied quite a lot to business as well.
I don't have anything like this because I recognize I'm very blessed. I don't worry about much.
No, you don't.
And you do.
Yeah.
So you read books where you think, oh, this guy's got a really good point there. So you take it on board.
Yeah.
Whereas I've kind of already taken it on board by some fluke of nature.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, I'm not very organised.
I actually, in this book, for me, it enables me not to worry.
Hmm.
Because I know I'm doing the right thing because I've thought about it. Well, you don't worry in the first place. So it's not necessarily you instinctively do what's in this book. It's just that you don't need to do what's in this book.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why all my favourite books are storybooks.
Yeah.
That's what that's what inspires me.
Yeah.
I think, wow, how did anyone think of that?
Yeah.
It's not about everyday sort of making life better. It's just like, what an amazing story. I would never have thought that in a million years. And that's what I love.
Yeah. No, I accept that. And I envy you that. I envy you the fact that you don't worry. And the fact that you seem to land on your feet the whole time. So you bastard.
That's skill.
So, but this book has...
Skilled manipulator, Paul.
Yeah, that's what it is. This book is worth read. I think it's worth a read from a business perspective. If you run a business, I think it'll help you to think in new ways about your business, but also it's good from a personal perspective as well. The second book is I thought I would claw it back to be about web design. I'm really interested to know how the listeners are going to react to this. Not this next choice, but the fact that we've talked about personal stuff. I'll never know whether people like us talking about this stuff or whether they don't.
So, some will, some won't.
Yeah, put comments in the show notes as to whether we're allowed to go off like this. Yes, anyway, the next book is to do with web design, so it's all right.
Computing for Dummies.
Yeah, that's my Bible. No, it's Designing with Web Standards by
Windows
Jeffrey Zelman. Yeah, Jeffrey Zelman's book is absolutely brilliant. I bought this book, I think I've said this before on the show, I bought this book entirely by accident.
Yeah.
But it's really set my entire career in a new direction. So before I read this book, I was feeling completely uninspired and stagnant in my career. We were a couple of years into Headscape, and I was knackered. I was completely done in, and I really didn't enjoy web design anymore. And I'd had enough and needed something really to inspire me. So reading this book totally re-inspired me and introduced me to the web standards community. I have to say, without reading this book, I doubt I'd still be doing web design, and I certainly wouldn't be doing this podcast. And as a result, I wouldn't be, you know, speaking around the world and doing all the cool stuff I get to do now. So thanks, Jeff.
Oh, yes.
Appreciated.
Yes, me too, because I wouldn't be doing it either.
It's had a big knock-on effect, that book. So.
Definitely.
In fact, to be honest, both of those choices has affected you. Both of those books in one way or another.
Just keep reading. I think I bought one of Molly's books and I read the first chapter. No offence to Molly there, but I can't do these books.
No.
I'm like...
There are very few that excite me. I have to say, Jeremy Key's Dom scripting book excited me because it... you know, it really, everything in that book was new to me. So it was hugely exciting reading that. So the same when I read Jeffrey Zeldman's book, everything in there was new to me. But so many books I pick up, you know, I'm pretty much aware of the concepts already. But that's why I get things like Getting Things Done. I tend to now read books that are outside of web design, actually. You know, that are either business books. So, you know, Tim Allen's 4-Hour Work Week is, you know, another good book that I really enjoyed.
Which I really should read that, but yeah. I know I won't.
Yeah.
Ever.
Well, you know, you've got me to read it for you.
Yeah, thanks, Paul.
There you go.
So you
there
are
we go.
My researcher.
Yeah, there we go. That wraps up today's show, except for Marcus's joke. What's your joke for today, Marcus?
Getting slightly iffy.
Oh, well, yeah, as if the last week's one wasn't slightly iffy.
Did we get
iffy.
Any...
no, we didn't, actually.
Oh, thank goodness for that. Right, okay, here we go. This one is from Wizard.
As long as it does it, it can't have... obscenities in, otherwise we'll get the explicit tag in.
No, 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 it hasn't got any obscenities in. I can't tell you what it has got in it because that would give it away.
Right.
But as you'll see, anyway, Dr. Dave
yeah.
had slept with one of his patients and felt guilty all
start.
Day long.
Oh, just for the day?
Just for the day. No matter how much he tried to forget about it, he couldn't. The guilt and sense of betrayal was overwhelming. But every once in a while, he'd hear an internal reassuring voice in his head said, in his head that said, Dave, don't cry about it. You aren't the first medical practitioner to sleep with one of their patients and you won't be the last. And your signal, just let it go. But invariably, another voice in his head would bring him back to reality, whispering, Dave, 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 you're a veterinarian.
Oh, I messed
it
up. You screwed up the punchline, but it was still the best joke. I think that's the best joke I've heard.
So, yeah, there you go. Sleeping with animals. That's slightly dodgy, isn't it?
Yeah, that's fine. if you live in the West Country, that's perfectly acceptable. Excellent. Thank you very much for that, Marcus. And thank you, too, for listening to the show. We apologise it's going to be a bit all over the place the next few weeks, but hopefully you enjoy it anyway, and there will be... yeah, some good alternative stuff coming up. So keep listening, and I'll talk to you in a few weeks' time. Goodbye.
Bye.
Hello, world of Boag.
It's like being on David Letterman.
Boag world.
/contact, call 020 8133 5122.